My country, before all other countries speak together today. Yes, that's what we do. We have a day of breakfast about once a month.
If we have a rabbi or someone to give us an advance over, we look at things like that. On the last occasion, I think, because we didn't have a rabbi from the advance over, Cedric set us a quiz, a very interesting and entertaining quiz. In which we actually learn something as well as a little bit. David said, very appreciative of your coming here, and we know, and as I actually mentioned at one of the reasons, I'm not quite sure which, we know that you've come here to get to know Liverpool, and you've met a lot of people, and seen lots of places, and you're going to see more places, and more people today. But then we're going to give you some documentation as well. We're going to give you three little things. First of all, this book here, which is Liverpool 800. It was a book produced really to commemorate the 800th anniversary of the city. And in fact, it's an interesting book. There is, in fact, there's bits and pieces about the history of the church as well, on the history of the Jewish community in Liverpool, incorporated in this book. The second present we have for you is a little DVD called Chicken Soup and Scouts. Chicken Soup and Scouts is a DVD on the history of the Jewish, the portraits as it's called, of the local Jewish community from the 18th century to today. This DVD was produced by Arvind Lewis, who you actually met at our house last night, and his brother-in-law, who was very into sort of protection, Arvind, the historian, his brother-in-law did this. Very interesting. It takes the form of old photographs and interviews with elderly members of the community, some of whom have now passed away, who remember the much earlier days of the community. And finally, an up-to-date portrait of the local Jewish community is the Merseyside Jewish Representative Council yearbook, in which it details all the organisations, institutions within the community, what their offices, who their offices are, where they're situated, and contains a number of interesting portraits. I just actually opened this, on one of the articles about Reverend Freeman, who was a cousin, nice for me to open that, he taught me my government. So we'll take this home with you, and you will be able to read and remind yourself of Liverpool, and perhaps show possible candidates these pictures of Liverpool.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you very, very, very much for those wonderful gifts. I, as you all know, came here to help you. And I told Merton when we were planning this visit that I'm here in order to do everything possible to help the community out. And I thought I'd leave by giving you my word that I'm here for you, I'm at your service, and I'm continuing to be at your service even when I go back to Israel. I didn't think I'll be privileged to leave Liverpool with such wonderful gifts. So I really thank you from the bottom of my heart for the generosity, for the wonderful weekends, and of course for your warmth, which is felt everywhere. I've noticed that England's a pretty cold place, weather-wise, but at least the people I've met here in Liverpool are very warm, kind, and giving people, and I thank you so much for the gifts. And I feel bad. I thought to myself, what can I bring you from Israel? So I had various things in my suitcase. And yesterday, as I was going through the building, I noticed that you don't yet have a Jewish library here in the building. Or I haven't seen it yet.
We have a small library. Yes.
So allow me to perhaps present you with something as well. A book that came out just recently from the head of our institution, Rabbi Riskin, on the Book of Shmot. I know that at present, and hopefully the at present will change very, very fast, you do not have a rabbi. So sometimes on a Friday night, Shabbat morning, I'm sure the congregants would like to hear a small word of Torah. So what I've done is I brought you from Israel a book of sermons. And I hope you can use this book of sermons, and you'll be able to prepare proper sermons to deliver to the congregation when you see fit, when it's possible, until such time as hopefully we'll be able to send you a rabbi who will be able to spiritually lead the congregation. So thank you very much, and of course I'll leave the book here before I leave today.
I'll leave this on you, okay?
Okay, thank you. Merton asked me to say a few words here at the breakfast, so with your permission, my condolences to all of you that you have to hear me again. I know that you heard me a little too much over the weekend, and I just wanted to add a very small note this morning, so please continue eating your bagels and drinking your coffee, because I want you to feel as comfortable as possible. We just finished the Parsha of Va'era, and this week, with God's help, we'll begin the Parsha of Bo. In between what we read yesterday and what we're going to read next Shabbos comes a very, very important date. What date is that? You announced it this morning after services. Correct. Rosh Chodesh of the month of Shvat. So therefore we announced this morning at services that services tomorrow will have to be 15 minutes earlier in order to get in all the editions of Rosh Chodesh, correct? Okay. And this week's Parsha is Parshat Bo. And Parshat Bo is a very, very fun Parsha to read, because even Jews who define themselves as a little undereducated Jewishly like this week's Parsha, because most of it tells the story of leaving Egypt. And despite your religious level, how much Jewish education you may have had, almost every Jew out there knows the story of leaving Egypt. Thanks to a holiday. Which holiday?
Pesach.
Pesach, of course. We know the Seder. We know what happened. So this week's Parsha is a fun Parsha because we know the events. So therefore, allow me to challenge you a bit and talk about one verse in this coming Parsha that most people do not know about because it's such a small verse. And that's the following verse. Beginning of chapter 12 in the book of Exodus, the book of Shemot, God says to the Jewish people, the fun is over. I am now giving you mitzvot. What are mitzvot? If I have to translate it into proper English. So I look to my English counterparts to translate it into proper English.
Commandments.
Absolutely correct. Many a Jew have translated the word mitzvot into good deeds. Now, as you know, good deeds are things that you do when you feel like it. And when you don't feel like it, you don't. You're a good man if you do a good deed, but you can't say you're a terrible person if you do not. Commandments come directly from the Commander-in-Chief, and I do not mean Mr. Obama. I mean the Commander-in-Chief, God himself. And the first commandment God gives the Jewish people of all time, not singular Jews like Abraham getting the mitzvah of Brit Milah, but rather the Jewish people as a whole, is the following mitzvah. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim. This month, the month of Nisan, the month of Pesach, is going to be the beginning of the Jewish months of the year, or from our perspective, the beginning of the Jewish year. Rishon Hu Lachem L'Chodshei HaShana. This is the first of the months of the year. And as you all know, we have two parallel calendars. We have the Jewish calendar, and we have the universal calendar. Rosh Hashanah is the beginning of the universal Jewish year. And Pesach, or the month of Nisan, when Pesach comes out, is the beginning of the Jewish calendar. So, just a practical difference, the month of Tishrei, where Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Sukkot are celebrated, is considered HaChodesh HaShvi'i, the seventh month. Because if you count from Nisan, you're going to see Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, Av, Elul, Tishrei. It comes out for the seventh month. And I've always wondered to myself, as many Jews have wondered, we have very, very important things to do in life, don't we? We have many mitzvot that are vital to the Jewish people. Eating kosher, saying Shema Yisrael, davening, Shabbos, Pesach. What is the mitzvah that God gives the Jewish people at the onset of having them be a nation? A very simple mitzvah that you have to declare at the beginning of the month. This is the first mitzvah God gives the Jewish people of all time. they have to declare the Jewish month as started. So tomorrow, what is the mitzvah? The mitzvah is to get up a touch earlier, to start services at 8 o'clock as opposed to 8:15, and to say, today is Rosh Chodesh. And as we say in modern Chinese, this is a ganze mitzvah. This is the mitzvah. God is beginning to give the Jewish people commandments, and this is the commandment. What are we supposed to learn from this? What's the lesson? I mean, a verse later, God gives the Jewish people the mitzvah of Korban Pesach, the Paschal lamb, and then all the mitzvahs of the holiday of Pesach. And we all know that our wives go absolutely berserk and ballistic, getting ready for Pesach. And that is a mitzvah that is heavy upon the Jewish people. But why is it that the first mitzvah, right beforehand, is to say that this is the month and it's beginning today? What's so special about Rosh Chodesh? What's so special about this mitzvah of declaring the beginning of the Jewish month? I could have picked much better mitzvahs for the Jewish people. And it seems to me, based on a comment of the Rashar Hirsch, that this is the most important thing to tell people that are about to begin a life of freedom. As you all know, the Jewish people were slaves until now. The difference between a slave and a free, liberated person is as follows. A slave doesn't have to decide in the morning what he or she is going to do. Who decides for them? Pardon?
The master.
The master comes out and says, you, Jewish people, are going today to polish my shoes and to vacuum the carpet and to go outside and feed the cows. All they have to do is do it. All a slave has to say is, yes, master. If he says no, master, he gets smacked in the face. That's all he needs to do. He doesn't need to set priorities. He doesn't need to decide how he's going to weigh all the various obligations that day. All he has to do is say a simple statement. Yes, master. And that's the way he survives or she survives. Not so with free people. How do free people have to survive? They have to go out and say, well, I have a lot I can do today. It's Sunday. Sunday outside of the land of Israel is the second day of Shabbos, as we all know. As you all know, there's 2 days of Yontif outside of Israel, and in Israel only 1 day. I think the same is true for Shabbos. In Israel, Sunday today is a regular day of work, regular day of school, and outside of Israel it's the second day of Shabbos. But a more moderated Shabbos. Why? We don't have all the prohibitions. The 39 prohibitions were lifted last night after we said Havdalah, correct? So today is a nice day of vacation. What are we going to do today? How are we going to spend our time? What is going to be the place in which we're going to invest our time? We could either use our time or we could waste our time. We're free. We can decide what to do. There's no dictates upon our time. What God is in essence telling the Jewish people is as follows. You now have at your disposal a gift, time. You can either use it or abuse it. You can either sanctify time or you can very easily waste your time. There's no more master telling you what to do. It's up to you. Now, we have a lot of mitzvot, don't we? 613. But quite frankly, they don't fill up the entire day. There's so much time left during the day that you could decide what to do with it. Ultimately, the most important thing to tell people at this juncture in life, they're about to become free, is you are now getting a precious gift. Time. Decide to use it well and do not abuse it. Therefore, the first mitzvah given to the Jewish people before Pesach and Shabbos and all the things that we think are important, use time. Declare that it's Rosh Chodesh and understand that upon you, you now have a holy mission to use the time in the upcoming month. To use your time adequately and properly. And that's why it's the first mitzvah given to the Jewish people. And as you all know today, there's many, many different things that compete with what we would like people to use their time with. Once upon a moon, there wasn't a lot to do at home. correct? Yeah. Television? Nothing on anyway. There was no cable TV for sure. So where did you go to get some recreation, to have some fun? You went to the synagogue, to a lecture, to a debate, even to a bingo night, to play cards in the men's club, to sew a quilt. Whatever it might have been, the synagogue as an institution was not just a place of prayer, it was a place, if I can use common language, to hang. Dang, to spend some time, to get a little respite from the pressures of the week. That is not the case today, correct? Today, if you take the synagogue, it is just one out of many good options of how we can spend our free time. Television, galore. Endless channels. You don't know what to do with your remote control. The problem with the remote control is that there's so many channels, you feel that if you pick one, you're missing something on the other. So, you have the TV. The internet, I don't have to tell you how full it is. With endless information and sites and articles and movies and shows, you do not need to come to shul to have fun. So how does a synagogue supposed to go and tell its members, its people that are not yet members, hey, this is the place to be as well. Internet, cable TV, and synagogue. How do you do it? And in my opinion, the answer is, we have to basically say one statement. One statement that will guide us and guide every synagogue around the world. And that is the following statement. Time is a very precious gift. You can either use it or abuse it. But to be more precise, you can become a victim of time or you can control your time. If I can quote a saying that has been said many times, unfortunately I don't remember the source of it, it is impossible to fight the tide. What you have to do is know how to ride the waves. And let me give you a small example in order to make it more tangible. Many of people today have internet in their homes. I have not yet been in any community from England to primitive Poland in which there isn't internet in people's homes. The internet is available. You can either say internet is disgusting, terrible, we don't want anything to do with it, or a synagogue could say, let's make an internet site. And on this internet site will not just be the times of services, but we will give resources for people to use their time. One of which is what I'm doing right now. I'm recording what I'm saying. After my visit here in Liverpool, I'm going to be putting it up on a website. People can download it. Where are they going to listen to it? You tell a person today, in this day and age, listen, you have to devote some time to learning Torah. Come on. Devote, what does that mean? Close my TV, close my email, close my cell phone, sit down in front of a book? That's very difficult. Very difficult. True, it works for some people. And every synagogue should have lecture series going on. But it's not for everyone. Perhaps the answer is to actually have an internet site with endless shiurim, lectures that people can download and listen to on the way to work, on the way back from work. When they're sitting in their living room, in their easy clothing with their feet up, eating popcorn. When they're on the way to a meeting. There's so much time they can use filling it in with the best things in the world. But we as a leadership of the synagogue, it's up to us to give them the tools to do it. If all we do is fight the tide's going to win us. We have to know how to ride the waves. And I just gave you one example of using the waves in a proper, wonderful way. Put digital classes on your internet site. If you don't have it in the synagogue, no problem. There's many links out there to classes you can download free of charge. All you need is an iPod or something else to download it to. People can listen to classes when they're exercising, when they're walking, when they're driving. Endless opportunities to use time. We can be a victim of time, or we can control our time. And I'll just end by saying that after seeing the community for how many days now, Merton? We came Thursday, Friday, around 3 days, 2 days minus. 2 days Maya. By the end of today, it will be 3 days. Okay? 72 hours by the end of my day today. 72 hours after seeing the community, what I've seen is a very genuine quest for more. A very genuine quest for charisma, for a dynamic community. But I just want to pre-warn that it's not going, not every program works for everyone. We have to think of ways to get to everyone. Some people will feel great to come to a synagogue, and some people won't feel comfortable in the synagogue. We have to think of ways of making them feel comfortable Jewishly. It could be in their own homes, by bringing the synagogue to them via a website, or many other ideas that I have in order to bring the synagogue to the people, as opposed to saying, no, you have to come to this building. I'll just give you one more example of one of our graduates that took this lesson to heart and did something that, in my opinion, was extremely innovative. He was in a community where there wasn't even one Shomer Shabbos Jew. When he came into the synagogue, everyone is Shomer Shabbos. They put on a kippah, a talis. They sit, men's section, women's section, they pray. But once they leave, they get into their cars on the Sabbath, and they drive home. From their perspective, Shabbos is limited to the 2-3 hours that they were in synagogue. So he saw a very big problem on his hands. And he decided that these people are not coming to synagogue except for the minimum time they have to come during the week. So what did he do? He changed it. Instead of the synagogue telling the people to come to it, he brought the synagogue to the people. How? Well, he said like this. People think you have to keep kosher where? In the shul kitchen, in the synagogue. You don't have to keep kosher at home. All religiosity is very limited to the synagogue, not to anywhere outside the synagogue. Now, that may sound preposterous to the group I'm talking to this morning, but you'd be surprised that many, many a Jew think like that. And I think, from a very logical perspective, I know why. Do you know why? Let's look at our other religions around us. The Christian religion. You can be a good Christian by coming to church when?
Sunday morning.
Sunday morning. There's no minyan every day. Yeah, it's true, there are people that have Mass every day. But the general people, the flock live differently than the priest. The flock can live in a certain way, and the priest has to be religious all week. We can be religious 1, 2, 3 hours on Sunday, and that's good enough for the week. Ultimately, many, many Jews think this way because of that influence. So what he decided to do is as follows. He decided to start a lecture series once a week. But where did he do it?
Somebody's house.
Somebody's living room. He approached one of the members of the synagogue and he said, listen, I would like to start a lecture series in your living room. And the answer he got first and foremost was, no, Rabbi, no one's going to come to the lecture series. What are you talking about? What are you going to do? Teach a page of the Gemara? Forget it. He says, no, that's not what I'm going to do. He happened to have at the time people that were around 50, 60 years old already thinking of retirement. He decided to bring an expert, a sociologist, as well as a psychologist, for a lecture series on dealing with retirement from a Jewish and professional perspective. Each lecture was an intertwining between the psychologist, sociologist, and the rabbi. The rabbi giving the Jewish perspective, the psychologist giving the more professional perspective. He went on to do something else. Retirees, many of them, are now dealing with health issues they didn't deal with before. So he brought doctors that were basically general practitioners that specialty was people of the elderly age, geriatric care. And once again, spoke about the Jewish perspective and the non-Jewish perspective. Well, the person was approached. He said, Rabbi, I'll be happy to host it, but as you know, my home is glatt treif, not glatt kosher. When we buy the pig, we make sure that it's glatt. So what are we going to do? The rabbi says, let's kosher your home. But Rabbi, we're not going to keep kosher afterwards. The rabbi said, okay, fine. For one evening, you'll have a kosher home. So he comes to the home, and he koshers the home, and they have some sort of a spread they put out, and everything went wonderfully. Once the lecture was over, and it was a very good lecture, thank God, he asked if someone wants to host the next one. And of course, someone did raise his hand. Actually, a woman raised her hand. It's interesting how I think to this day, the women run the houses and not the men. And the woman raised her hand and said, sure, I'll be very happy to host the next one. And once again, my house is blocked. God said, fine, I'll kosher your home. No problem. Kosher the home. They had another lecture there. This went on for about a year. When the year was up, not everyone, but certain people felt that it's already an annoyance to have the rabbi come and kosher the home, which is a big process of waiting 24 hours and not using the dishes and then koshering it. So some of them said, you know what, Rabbi? I don't mind hosting the next lecture series, but let's just keep the home kosher. How do I do it? Well, you go to the supermarket, you buy this, you don't buy that, and this and that and the other thing. And slowly but surely, the community started to change. And the people of which the synagogue was brought to them started to come to the synagogue because they were warmed up by the synagogue. Their hearts were warmed by the fact that the rabbi was coming to them and not they having to come to the rabbi. It's very vital to use our time and not to abuse it. However, we have to think of innovative ways to do it in this day and age, because in this day and age, we got a lot of competition on our hands. And what's interesting to me is Tu B'Shvat, which is coming up in this coming month. As you all know, Tu B'Shvat is the holiday of the trees. What's unique about a tree? The tree is all planted in the same way. The roots are there. Depending on how much you nurture it, will be the function of how much it's going to grow and what fruits it's going to produce. The same thing is true with any community and any Jew. The roots are there. We were all born Jewish, or we converted to Judaism. We have the roots. Now we have to see how much we're going to nurture those roots in order to see if this tree is going to produce delicious fruit that people will enjoy and get inspiration from, or God forbid not. After seeing the willingness in the Liverpool community, I am very optimistic that you will find the ways in order to bring the synagogue to the people. You'll find the ways in order to nurture the roots that have already been planted here, because you have many roots in the community, much more for communities I've seen this size. And of course, our institute, the Amiel Institute, will do all possible to help you in order to gain the very important mission and the goal of allowing people to properly use their time, ride the waves, and hopefully, God willing, see a flourishing community come out of the community of Liverpool. Thank you very, very much.